You may have seen me around, but I'm in a similar position as Douglas, in that I finished my year of familiarization, but there are no positions being advertised at the moment. I ministered in the denomination called the UPCSA, which is the Uniting Presbyterian Church in Southern Africa, for 18 years before coming to Scotland. And I want to encourage you, the union's going well, the discussions are going well, everything is going well, and part of this process is this pulpit swap, Douglas preaching at Gorgie today, and I'm preaching here, and then in a few weeks' time, on the 16th of July, we're going to be having a united service again, with two congregations coming together here at Palmerston Place. So I'd encourage you to join in with what is happening, and get excited about what God can do as we work together. So at Gorgie, there's a lot of interaction, and I see there's some interaction here as well with Lisa pushing you out of your comfort zones. But sometimes I ask questions during the sermon, and I'd encourage you just to put up your hand or respond in some way. So let's be honest, who enjoys speaking publicly? Not many people, right? No one really enjoys speaking publicly, but we all know that communication is really vital. Communication is vital. Getting our message across is important. It's important to build understanding. It's important to share our vision. It's important to share knowledge. It's important to reach objectives. Communication is vital. When I prepare couples for marriage, I often say to them, the depth of your communication will determine the depth of your relationship. The depth of your communication will determine the depth of your relationship. I hope no one's kicking their partner under the table at the moment. Are we talking on a superficial level, or are we talking on a deeper level about our hopes and our dreams, our fears and our doubts? We have so many ways of communicating in the 21st century. So many ways. Who here has written a letter lately to a friend? Great. Who's here has written a love letter to a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or something? Why have we stopped doing that? All right, so we have SMS, we have email, we have WhatsApp, we have Twitter, we have all these kinds of communication. Who enjoys getting an SMS on their birthday or WhatsApp? Yeah, some of you. But what is really much better than that is a phone call, right? Really hearing the person's voice greeting you with that emotion that comes from the tone and the excitement in their voice. Or what is even better if they had to come visit you, right, and bring a cake or two and have a good blether, right? That would be really good. We prefer that, right? So how is our communication? How are our relationships with our children, our grandchildren, our spouse, our friends, our colleagues? Communication gurus, those specialists, say that more than 50% of our communication is not the words, but the tone, the speed, the pause, the hand gestures, the eye contact. Our whole bodies are communicating. When we decided to swap pulpits and I discovered the topic was the Son of God, I was a bit overwhelmed. It's like, where do you start? What do you talk about? What do you communicate? I was drawn to Hebrews because 11 times in Hebrews, Jesus is called Son. 5 times in this first chapter alone. Further, the title Son of God is used 4 times in Hebrews. What is distinctive about Hebrews, though, is that there's no definitive article. And some say that is because they wanted to reference the character and the nature, not the personality of Jesus. Abdul Imram has this interesting study of the word, which we often translate one and only son, or the beloved son, only beloved son. He highlights that the Greek word literally means one in kind, unique. One in kind, unique. As you come to worship this morning, is Jesus one in kind, unique? Perhaps he used to be. Perhaps that is what you believe. But over time, there's other voices that have told us maybe he's not so unique. The whole book of Hebrews is an argument, in a sense, to convince those that are listening, those that it's written to, that Jesus is greater, superior to all their leaders that have gone before. Greater than Moses, greater than Joshua, greater than the high priest, greater than the law, even greater than the angels. We don't know who the author is of this letter, this book, but we do know that it's written to Judeo-Christians that were struggling. They were finding it really tough to stand up to follow Jesus in their culture. They find themselves in a hostile culture where trying to stay true to Jesus means ridicule and persecution. Some in the new faith are considering going back to their old ways of temple worship with sacrifices. This world is changing fast, and perhaps it's challenging for us as a church too to stand up for Jesus, to follow him faithfully. Somehow the name Jesus has been undermined, undervalued. The superior and unique nature of Jesus, sadly, has come under attack. Not only outside in the world, but even within the church. The author of Hebrews wants his audience to relook, reconsider, take a closer look at Jesus, to encourage them, to remind them, to motivate them to stand firm and to persevere in their faith. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus is portrayed as addressing God in the first person as Father, except on the cross. At Jesus' baptism, a voice is heard from heaven, "This is my Son, whom I love." And at the Transfiguration, again, a voice declares, "This is my Son, whom I love. Listen to him." Throughout the Gospels, Jesus is mocked and criticized and questioned, accused for claiming to be the Son of God. The first few verses of Hebrews have five unique, extensive, phenomenal claims about Jesus. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom he also made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. Wow, five things. Heir of all things. Heir of all things. That speaks about the end, right? Where all things would come under the rule and the reign of Christ. King Charles had to wait for a really long time, right? Just to take hold of this small kingdom. But Jesus will be heir over all things. Creator of all things, verse 2. That takes us right from the end, what will happen, to right to the beginning, before time. Through him all things were made. I don't know if you've seen any of the recent images from the James Webb Space Telescope. Anyone seen any images recently? Quite amazing images, right? Profound. As scientists and those that are studying these things discover the mind-boggling magnificence and mysteries of God's creation. Some who study the vastness of the universe estimate that there are 17 sextillion, that's actually a word, right? 17 sextillion, that's 24 zeros, stars out there. I didn't even know that such a word existed. How many molecules of water do you think it takes to contain 70 sextillion molecules of H2O? Any ideas? How many molecules of H2O, how many drops of water do we need to contain 70 sextillion molecules of H2O? 10 to 40, right? Depending. 10 to 40. So from the vastness of the universe to the smallest thing God created, and it's all amazing. The third thing, the radiance of God's glory. I don't know what that means to you, but when I think of radiance, I think of light. I think of exubering. How does Jesus exude God's glory? Is it through his goodness, through his perfection, through his wisdom, through his righteousness, through his love? Jesus exuded God's glory. The fourth one, the exact representation of God. The exact representation of God. I don't know about you, but when I was a lot younger, and the first child was born, Daniel, you kind of, people would say, gee, he looks just like you. And I was like, wow, it'd be strange if he didn't. It would actually be a problem. He looks just like you. Colossians 1:15. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven. The exact representation. He came to display God. Lastly, the sustainer of all things. I don't know what that means to you. As I try to wrestle with what that means, it's just too much for my brain capacity to contemplate. The sustainer of all things. In other words, he's still at work amongst us, keeping us going, keeping us connected, keeping this whole thing together. God is actively involved in our lives through Christ. Colossians 1:16. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn among the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. Five things. Maybe you want to take them home and reflect on them. Heir of all things, creator of all things, the beginning and the end. The radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of God, sustainer of all things. Five characteristics. The writer of Hebrews wants to lay these out to say, Jesus is superior. He's greater than all the prophets of old. He's superior than the high priest who goes into the Holy of Holies. He is the superior sacrifice. The main theme, however, in this book is that God's communication to the whole world and to the church is through the Son. God had something to say. And maybe a question for us to ask ourselves, does God still have something to say through Christ to us today? As John puts it, the Word became flesh. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one who, and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. All knowledge, all love, all service seen in him. Jesus is the messenger and the mediator. Not a written message, but a lived one. Hebrews 1 verse 1. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son. The message of God's love for us and the way that he intends to live in his presence through us came to us in various and fragmented ways in the Old Testament, through dreams, through prophets, through miracles of provision and rescue, through tablets on stones, through fire, even through a donkey. The message was not complete and often misunderstood or unheard or unfathomable. But ultimately, God spoke through Jesus in a way that could not be ignored or denied. Who better to send a message than the Son? Surely they would listen to the Son. Over and over again, there's a question that comes up in talk shows, in interviews. I don't know if you've ever contemplated it. Maybe you want to do so this morning. If you could spend an hour with someone, who would it be? Anyone. If you could spend an hour with someone, who would it be? And I'm sure some of us who have lost loved ones would contemplate spending another hour with that person to share our love and our lives, our struggles. Maybe to say once more, I love you, or forgive me. Whatever. But on a different level, what if you had to say someone famous, who would you want to spend an hour of your time with? Any ideas? St. Paul. Yes. Dave, that would be a good one. David Attenborough. Got a lot to thank him for, right? Who else? For me, it must probably be Nelson Mandela. Such an extraordinary life of forgiveness and sacrifice. Or Barack Obama, you know, when I heard him speak at Nelson Mandela's funeral, I thought, wow, if only I could communicate like that, you know, if only the world could listen, right? Or my favorite, Bono. Anyone heard of Bono? Lead singer of U2, if I could spend an hour with him and a good bottle of wine, that would be fantastic. Bono is still using his platform, right? And it's a big platform, and it's got huge speakers, and he's using it to proclaim a message of unity and love. If only we would listen. What messages are shaping your responses to the world events and current ideologies? What messages? There are so many voices, so many voices. I implore you this morning to consider afresh Jesus, the Son of God, who came to communicate God to us, not only to communicate it to us in words, but in actions. It's a superior message, all knowledge, all love in him. I started off talking about communication as the key to relationships because it develops understanding. It may be that you're listening here or listening online. Hello. We'd love to have you join us here if you're listening online. The depth of your relationship is determined by the depth of your communication. Maybe you tuned in this morning just to hear that one line. Is there a friendship, a colleague, some relationship, a partner that seems stagnant? It could be because it's regressed into cliche conversation. Those things that are safe to talk about, because we don't talk about those things that aren't safe anymore, because we've gone down that road and we haven't resolved that problem. And so now we don't talk about it anymore. If there is a consistent message throughout the Bible, it is that humans have a problem. We're unclean. We've fallen. We're frail. We're fallible. In a sense, we are marred. And so we cannot fully experience this righteous and just God because of sin. The minute I mention sin, however, some of us switch off because we don't know how to define it, and we've experienced situations where people have defined it in one way to defend themselves and in another way to condemn others. Yet we look around the world and the world is in distress. Climate change, financial inequality, poverty, nations at war, war zones within our own context, people carrying burdens of debt, burdens of guilt and shame, of their own actions and of other people's actions. What if sin is defined simply by putting self first and not thinking of others? Or putting self first and not considering God? The temple in the Old Testament times was a really, really clear picture that sin separated us. The structure of the temple, moving in from the outer court to the inner court, showed that sacrifices need to be made so that we become cleansed to enter the presence of God. Sin has consequences, and sadly, it separates us from experiencing the very presence of God. Hebrews chapters 5 to 10, and more specifically 8 to 10, explain how Jesus has provided the solution once and for all, making those who trust in Him clean so that they can appear in confidence before the presence of God. Those chapters juxtapose the work of Christ against that of the high priest, who would enter behind the curtain once a year on the Day of Atonement. Jesus came to show us, not just in words, but in actions, that we are forgiven, that the way is made into the very presence of God. In that introduction to Hebrews, there's a sentence that's so pregnant with meaning. Hebrews 1, verse 3. After He had provided purification for sins, He sat down at the right hand of the Majesty in heaven. Wow. Jesus is the message and the mediator, and the message has been given, and it has been shown, and the way has been made so that we can have confidence to enter the very presence of God because our consciences have been cleared. Jesus is seated because the work has been accomplished. Jesus cried out on the cross, "It is finished, tetelestai." A way has been made for all to enter, knowing that we can bring all to Jesus. There's not a topic that we need to hide from Him. There's not a conversation that we need to have with Him that He doesn't know about. There's nothing that we can bring up that He hasn't covered through the cross. There's nothing that we need to shy away from. In conclusion, I'm going to end. Hello? Is anyone still with me? There's a story told, and there's a whole lot of different versions of the story, but it's a story that really speaks of a profound truth. There's a Confederate soldier who returned home, and he went to the White House at the end of the Civil War because he was so depressed and downcast because his farm had been taken, and he knew that Lincoln was a just man, and if Lincoln heard his story, he would have pity on him and make right. And so he tried to get into the White House by all means, but the federal soldiers would not let him in because they had their protocols and they had their procedures that they had to adhere to. But outside, this man started talking to this young boy. And this young boy said, "No worries, I will take you." And so the boy and this man walked past the soldiers, into the White House, straight into the library where Lincoln was sitting, studying. He introduced the soldier to his father. The boy was Tad, the president's son. You see, the son could do for the man what no one else could do. God's presence is the highest in the universe, and it is gained by means of knowing the Son. And so this makes Jesus the greatest Son in the universe. He is the way, He is the truth and the life. Knowing Him is the highest knowledge. May I implore you again to consider Jesus, Son of God, as the messenger and the message. Hebrews 1:4. So he became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. For to which of the angels did God ever say, "You are my son"? Today I have become your father. Or again, I will be his father, and he will be my son. Angels are literally messengers. But God sent his son as the ultimate messenger with the ultimate message that he desires to have a relationship with us. He demonstrated it through his body broken and bloodshed. And there is never a moment that we need to feel insecure about coming into His presence. There's never a moment that we need to feel doubt and shame because He has made the way. All things were committed to Him, and in His hands are all things. As you leave this morning, may you consider afresh Jesus, the Son of God, the light of the world.